Bold City Sports Talk with Rob Mascio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Bold City Sports Talk. I'm Rob. With me, as always, is Ben. Benjamin, how are you doing today, bud?
Rob, I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm a little down today because, you know, baseball season's about to be over.
Yes.
But
I agree.
You know, we got a historic game seven, one of the best words in all of sports.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
This one's not disappointing, sir. This
no,
one is definitely not disappointing.
Not at all. We got game seven World Series. We got Zach Greinke versus Max Scherzer. Quick update here. Bottom of the sixth. Houston's up 2-0. We got looks like Josh Reddick's on first. 0-2 count. They got the Nats have Patrick Corbin toeing the rubber right now. I mean, it's game seven. You throw the kitchen sink. Doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. You play to win the game, as Herm Edwards had once uttered. But when it comes to a game seven, man, you make sure you take this no matter what. You use who you have to use. And, you know, this game, this World Series in a whole, I mean, I know a lot of people are kind of going into it going Astros, Nats, but this World Series has not disappointed whatsoever. I mean, what are you thinking?
Man, this has been one for the ages.
Sure.
I tell you what, the thing you and I were talking about, with no home teams having a win thus far going into game seven, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
Only that, you know, Houston has overcome, you know, and being down 0-2.
Yeah.
You know, this will be what we were saying, I think maybe in like the prior podcast, is that this will be the first team to do it if they win tonight since the 96 New York Yankees, when they were down 0-2 to the Braves and then they came back and won the whole thing. So this has been one of those ones that's been not to disappoint. And,
absolutely.
You know, it's been a fun ride. The whole season's been a great ride. We've seen a lot of good stuff going on. A lot of young talent coming up through the pipelines there and the minor league system. And, I mean, even in this game, you got Juan Soto that came up last, you know, the year before last, and then you've got, Alvarez, over there playing for the Astros. I mean, it just gets better and better and better.
Absolutely.
And, you know, baseball is fun like that because, the young talent just keeps on coming up through the pipes and they keep on finding guys that do more incredible things, you know?
Sure. And, to go back on what I was saying, it looked like it was Jake Marisnick, my apologies, who was on first. George Springer had a check swing strikeout. Jose Altuve grounded to a double play. So we are now done. It appears, with the sixth inning going into the top of the seventh, Houston Astros still up 2-0. It being baseball, you know, we're seeing some crazy things in the World Series. Two things off the top of my head I saw. President Trump, you know, game five in Washington was booed very loudly. And in that very same game, Gerrit Cole was flashed by two ladies on live television who were sitting behind home plate. And I guess you never really know what you're going to see in a baseball game. Two things I had never seen before, but have seen now.
Yeah.
But
that's a dynamic duo right there. I don't think anybody went into that watching that game thinking that would happen.
That's the Batman and Robin of a baseball game right there. I do agree.
The one thing, though, that
I'm very disappointed we are seeing is the constant blown calls. We had seen it all season long. It's continuing into it's bleeding into the playoffs. It's now in the World Series in game five. You know, let's just go back into that. Two blown calls that really dictated that game. Home plate umpire Lance Barksdale was unfortunately part of both of them. Top of the fourth, 0-2 count, Carlos Correa. Joe Ross sitting there in his third pitch, which was a slider, just clearly clips the strike zone, not called. Fans were, you know, erupt for good measure. And in classic baseball fashion, the fourth pitch to Carlos Correa was deposited into left field. This one, you know, this is one of those ones. It's home field. You almost kind of feel like the Nationals are going to get a home field advantage, but they don't. And it was clearly a strike. Should have been called a strike. Carlos Correa was out, was not out. Ends up hitting a bomb. Later on in that game, bottom of the seventh now, the Astros are leading 4-1, two outs. Ryan Zimmerman walks. Victor Robles comes up to the plate. Robles works a full count. I mean, we're talking about World Series here. Two strikes, two outs. Garrett Cole throws a 98-mile-per-hour fastball up and way away, mind you. And for some reason, it's still called a strike to end the Nats' momentum in the game. And the Astros end up thrashing the Nationals 7-1. I don't know. I didn't know what to make of Game 5. I was really hoping we weren't going to see something to this effect again. And unfortunately, it happens. Game 6 rolls around. Trey Turner hits a slow roller to the pitcher with Turner's elite speed. He makes it to first. But Brad Peacock, the Astros pitcher who's on the mound, throw to the first baseman, Yuli Gurriel, was off. Thus, making it look as if Trey Turner was in the way of the throw. He was not. Sam Holbrook, the umpire, then calls Trey Turner out for interference as Turner was then, again, due to the throw, quote-unquote, technically outside the first baseline area. Dave Martinez then got out of the dugout, started going off on the umpires, again, rightfully so, and very fortunately enough for the Nationals, with someone still on, Nats third baseman Anthony Rendon comes up and hits a two-run bomb. But the thing is they went in, they reviewed this play. You're holding up the game. It had to be, you know, upwards of at least a 5-minute delay. You got Dave Martinez.
Oh, it was just incredible.
Losing his mind. Yeah, and Trey Turner, rightfully so, is sitting there screaming, going, "Where am I supposed to run?" He ran right down the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, this one of the three, I felt was like the biggest one. Again, they're though very fortunate enough. Nationals, Rendon comes up, hits a 2-run bomb, so kind of makes up for it. Should have been a 3-run bomb, but Nats end up winning a 7-2 anyway. Game 6, they had to win that one, and they did. But and very fortunately enough for them, this play didn't derail that. I don't know. What's your takes on these three very polarizing mistakes here by umpires?
I mean, these could have been costly. Unfortunately, sure. Unfortunately last night, it delays the game and mm-hmm. everything, but Rendon ends up making them pay anyways. So, it was frustrating, but and to the Nationals, you know, and in their corner, they could have had an extra run off of Rendon's, you know, home run. But, it was a delay and it was kind of a pain, but it ended up not being that big of a deal in the end because the Nationals still won. So
thankfully,
you know, it's not like it turned the game around and caused them to lose because of the one blown call. So, right. I mean, I was amazed. I couldn't believe it took that long to deliberate and everything. And I felt like he was running, down the right base path and everything, staying in his lane. So, I don't know what Holbrook saw. Anthony
Rendon just went deep, top of the seventh. Sorry to cut you off there, Benny, but beautiful. This game is fantastic.
Are you good?
Top of the seventh. Rendon just goes silly deep to left field. Houston is up 2-1, one out, top of the seventh. You're AJ Hinch, you're the Astros manager, Ben. What are you doing right now? Are you looking to pull Greinke or do you let the vet sit in there? He's only up to 75 pitches. I mean, this is an amazing pitch count for being top of the seventh. But Rendon is proven once again. You know, Game 6 home run. Did we were talking earlier? Rendon hit a home run today.
Yeah,
I believe I said that. I believe I said something to this effect would happen.
You predicted that.
He's good, man. Rendon's good, and he should win the NL MVP. But please go ahead. I do apologize. I want to keep this as up to date as possible. Wow, that was amazing.
Oh no, you're good. You're good. If I was him, I would probably even been there just because, you know, you got one out and there's nobody on.
That's what I'm thinking.
So there's minimal damage right now. If he starts walking guys, I'd immediately start hitting the bullpen. But I'm sure he's got somebody warming up right now. But
we got Juan Soto up right now. Oh man,
yeah, that's dangerous. He's 1-for-2 tonight with the strikeout.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he'll be a little swing happy for Grinke right here, but this will be a good.
Well, you know, he's swinging for the fences. He wants to tie this game up.
He wants to put one over there in railroad tracks again.
Yeah. Kid's a beast. Like I said, don't worry about it, Nationals. Bryce Harper and his bloated contract. You don't have to worry about that guy again. You got Juan Soto. He is going to be the better player. Let's kind of
hit the 320, right? Now, man, in the postseason, in the World Series,
yeah. I mean, you were talking about earlier. I wanted to kind of piggyback off that a little bit of these young kids coming up, man, and doing some damage. You Soto, Yonder Alvarez, Yordan. Excuse me, my apologies. Yordan Alvarez for the Astros going off. I mean, yeah, it's an exciting time for baseball. You know that we had the Braves there in the first round with Ronald Acuna, you know, you got Ozzy Albies. Mm-hmm. There's some exciting stuff coming into baseball. And I agree with you. I really feel like, man, if you want a really good taste of baseball, you watch a game 7 live. Watch game 7 live of a baseball game. I swear you'll be hooked. I swear. It's a great sport. Yeah. And it it needs its fans. It really does. I mean, it's one of those games. They need their fans. But let's kind
of piggyback off of that.
Yeah. Shoot.
Well, to piggyback off of that, I remember thinking that, you know, baseball was boring. And then as a kid, I remember that that Marlins World Series where they took down the Yankees. And wow.
Yeah.
If this is what this sport's about, I got to get a bigger taste of this and get more heavily into it. You know, I mean, I loved playing it as a kid, but just couldn't get into watching it.
Sure.
And
I was 03, if I'm not mistaken.
After understanding the games. Yeah. What's that?
I think that was
2003.
Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah, wow.
Yep.
Grinke just got pulled.
So that's when I really started.
Grinke just got pulled. Sorry again. Grinke's pulled.
Oh, you're good.
Juan Soto is on first. He walked him. Good call. Good call on that.
Yeah.
Walked one guy.
Yeah.
I think that's the right move. This is game 7. You make the moves now. You know what's crazy about this right now? Astros are up 2-1. They have 8 hits to the Nationals, too. That's scary.
Yeah.
You almost wonder they're
pretty well tonight.
They are, but you got to almost they are, and you got to wonder if the Nationals are about to break through here a little bit, and that's worrisome. Baseball is very momentous game. It's a real word. Anyway, Benny, did you want to add to that point at all, or you tell me, bud?
What's that?
What we were just talking about. Did you have anything left?
No, I'm good. I mean, I just was kind of piggybacking off of what you were saying. Baseball fans and the World Series is definitely one of those hook, line, and sinkers that can get more people in there.
Yes,
and if it's entertaining, you know, people are going to come and watch. So,
sure.
To your point, you are absolutely 100% correct.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, for sure. And, you know, to kind of dive in a little more, I mean, we saw it all season, as I was saying, blowing these calls. What's a ball? What's a strike? What's a strike? What's a ball? I don't even know. It's almost like we were getting into like the NFL territory a few years ago. What's a catch? What's not a catch? Now we're asking ourselves in baseball, what's a ball? What's a strike? And, you know, I want to know what the heck's going on here, because it's like it's an epidemic at this point. And I have turned off games this year because I was getting so frustrated. Like, we're so enamored by the analytics and perfecting everything. And we're able to essentially look at a player and say, hey, by season's end, they should have X amount of home runs, X amount of RBI. And like, it's getting so good now. It's getting so good to this point that, a lot of these analytics are correct. So why don't we clean up the sport a little bit? Why don't we clean up the sport a little bit to make sure that we are on point with getting these guys either their home runs, their hits, or their walks by not going, oh, that was, you know, again, Garrett Cole in game five, that pitch was so up and away that you're royally screwing over the batter and worrying about his statistics. So it's a huge flaw in the game. Oh, it's the human element. Well, we're taking the human element out of everything else in baseball. We might as well get the balls and strikes right. I don't understand why this is so tough. Now, earlier in the year, they started, you know, there were some grumblings. Oh, the robo-ump. First and foremost, please change the name of that. It sounds like RoboCop's going to be sitting there behind home plate and behind the catcher. It's not going to be a robot, people. Like, that needs to change. But, like, what do you think, man? Like, what do you think, Ben? Like, do you feel this is ruining the game for you? Because it is for me. And in all honesty, it's getting to a point where it's becoming frustrating. And what do you think the answer could be? Like, what could you see happening to correct this major flaw in baseball?
Well, sure.
The hometown kid, Howie Kendrick, just hit a two-run bomb to right field off of Will Harris. Second pitch.
Wow.
Washington is up 3-2, top of the seventh, one out.
Oh, this is giving me
MG. I just said that.
This is giving
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Jacksonville native.
Giving me thoughts.
Howie Kendrick just hit an opposite two-run bomb. 3-2 Nationals.
Vu.
Yeah, of the Dodgers, right? Is that where you're going with that?
Yep. Yep, that's
walk-off granny to seal the deal. Holy moly, yep. That just happened. That just happened. one of our good buddies, David, just texted me, Astros fan, wow, period, this game, period. Wow. That was amazing.
We still got time.
We do. There's still plenty of time, but this is a great game. People, Game 7 World Series live, I beg you, watch it. It's tons of fun. Let's.
I can't believe you just called that, too. He just said that Washington may be swaying the other way.
Yep. Oh, and as Drubal Cabrera gets a hit, gets a base knock. Oh boy. Oh, this is going to be exciting. All right, let's. Oh man. All right, so the big game. Jacksonville is preparing for the Jacksonville's big game. Florida, Georgia, going to be played at TIAA Bank. Everybody loves it here in Jacksonville.
For those classic people, it's called the Gator Bowl.
That's the throwback. The throwback's the Gator Bowl.
Back in the day.
Will Harris is getting pulled from the game. Florida, Georgia's coming. Everybody loves this. Florida fans love this. Georgia fans love this. People who like to drink love this. This is a fun time. Jacksonville loves hosting this thing. Again, I do believe, they just recently even just named that they would extend it. I want to say, what was it, to 2023? Was that what they said? Do you know off the top of your head, Ben?
Yeah, 23. That's okay. And then with an option to extend, I think, off of that. So
excellent. And this game shouldn't go anywhere. This is a main staple in the Jacksonville community, and you know, it's just fun. I mean, you Jacksonville is a pretty solid, albeit it is a little closer to Gainesville. I mean, it's might as well be a midway point for both Athens and Gainesville, and it's kind of interesting. Couple fun facts, if you will, about Florida, Georgia. The game has been played in Jacksonville since 1933. It was coined, and this was the best. I'd heard this before. Everybody says it. It was coined the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And I had heard that a thousand times, you know, being here in Jacksonville. But I never knew where it came from. In 1950, a Florida Times Union sports editor, and I'm going to butcher the last name, I do apologize, sir, but Bill Castells, I'm going to hope that's it, saw a drunken fan offer alcohol to a police officer and coined it the world's largest cocktail party. That's where that came from. Never heard of it. Didn't know that. Did you know that, Ben?
I didn't know about the fan offering the police officer alcohol, but as far as I know, the term for the game, it's always been the world's largest outdoor cocktail party for me.
And that, so, yeah, yeah, you and everybody else in Jacksonville, my friend. This was also kind of interesting. When I dug into some numbers trying to figure out who had kind of held the record, which I didn't know, the overall record is in debate. Georgia claims that they are 47-40-2, where Florida claims it's actually 46-40-2. So it's a one win difference. Well, Georgia says that the initial meeting was in 1904, where Georgia put a whooping on the Florida 52-0. Thing is, the game was played in Lake City. So Georgia tends to say that the game didn't count. It wasn't an official, Florida-Georgia game. But so there is a one game difference. Again, never heard of this, but there's a one game difference to what Georgia claims and Florida claims. Can't say I remember 1904 so much, but I have seen my fair share of Florida-Georgia games. And again, it to me, and I know we've said this prior, is absolutely one of the best games, all season long in college football.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, worst beatdown. Ben, take this one. 1942. Again, another time we didn't win. Or we didn't win. Excuse me. We didn't.
We weren't around.
We weren't around. Excuse me. Wow. Couldn't have won if we weren't around. Excuse me on that one. But feel free to take that one, man.
Yeah, the biggest beatdown was a 75-0 win by the Gators. Young team, and lost a lot of guys to the World War II efforts. And Florida didn't field a team the next year due to the war, so it was postponed, or the series was postponed until 1944.
I know, that's crazy. And so Georgia took the Gators to the shed there, 75-0. But again, very interesting time. With the war going on, a lot of people, either being drafted or going to war, as a lot of people did, just very interesting times, like this game, it's on that kind of level. Like it precedes history. You know what I mean? Like I was digging some of this stuff up, I was like, man, this is so awesome. And again, another reason why I really feel like that, it needs to stay here in Jacksonville. This is something Jacksonville needs. And there's also, too, I don't know if you knew, this, there's a Hall of Fame for the Florida-Georgia game. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's over there in Veterans Memorial Coliseum.
That's pretty cool. Again, news to me. I was like, oh, geez, wow, I didn't even know that. It's in our hometown and everything. Yeah. And the other thing, this was pretty interesting this year, just to kind of bring it back to present day, is the first time in series history that both teams are coming off a bye week to meet each other in Jacksonville. Very interesting. Surprised that it's never happened before. But I know Florida generally has their bye week before Florida-Georgia, and it looks as if Georgia has theirs. So I know it's only Wednesday, but we crave our Saturdays. Ben, what are your thoughts on the outcome of the game this year? Florida, Georgia, we got number 6 Florida going against number 8 Georgia. And again, I can't even remember last time they've been this ranked this high facing each other.
I want to say 2008 was
okay.
2008 was probably it. I think they both came into the game, both undefeated in that one. And
dang,
it's been, I guess 11 years.
That's even so, just hard to believe.
It is very hard to believe. Two storied programs.
Yes,
this absolutely is one of the probably one of the coolest rivalry games, in all of college football, being that it's played in a neutral site. This and the probably the Red River rivalry are probably two of my favorite neutral site rivalry games. Yep. So this year, you know, Georgia's supporting a very talented team, full of those five stars that Kirby's been recruiting.
Yeah, and, Kirby's smart.
I expect you know that you know they're already favored, so I feel like if DeAndre Swift has a big game, I feel like Florida's probably going to end up losing the heartbreaker here. The biggest question mark for the Gators, I think, is that defensive line. If they don't have their two starters, Zuniga and Grenard, I feel like old DeAndre Swift's going to have an absolute field day. They struggle to stop the run against South Carolina, and this guy's a much better running back. So, you know, at the quarterback, you know, quarterback duel there. I mean, Fromm has been mentioned as a game manager. Take that term how you want to. I think he does a great job. They're a little bit down in wide receiver this year. The Florida got the advantage as far as wide receiver position. Both of them have stout defenses. Kirby, you know, of course, being a Nick Saban disciple, they always had good defenses at Alabama, and he's definitely brought that pedigree to Georgia. So
always,
and Todd Grantham doing a great job with the Gator squad this year. The last two games, they've kind of gotten dinged for quite a few yards, and it's probably hurt their stats a little bit as far as the overall number. But again, two key players being out in Zuniga and Grenard has definitely not helped with the defensive stats. You know, funny thing I heard, when they are both in there, the opposing runners are averaging like 1.2 yards per carry. So
wow.
Those two play a big piece of that Florida defense. So like I said, if those guys set the edges, shut down Swift, you know, it's going to be a pain in the butt day there for Georgia. But I don't know that I see that. I think Swift's going to take this game on his back. He's really become a vocal leader this season, and I feel like he's going to have those boys on his back and be you know, be ready to play on Saturday. But, you know, we'll see. It's a rivalry game. It can go either way.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. Real quick, jumping back into the game. 3-2 Nationals, mid-7th. Ozuna got a couple quick outs there to stymie the Nationals scoring. So let's see if the Astros can score back. Benny, yeah, you were right. 08 looks like the last time they were that close. Florida was 5, Georgia was 8, so really couldn't be any much closer. Give me a score. What are you thinking? What are you thinking happens on Saturday, Florida, Georgia?
I think I'm going to probably take Georgia 31. Let's go 31-24, Georgia.
Okay. I like it. I'm very intrigued to see how Georgia responds, and I do agree with you with Florida's defense, but I think Florida's defense is fast. We saw it against Auburn, albeit it was, you know, a true freshman quarterback in Bo Nix. But I have not been impressed with Jacob Fromm this year. And I have a feeling that the Gators get to him early. And I do like Swift, but I have a feeling the Gators are going to edge this one out. And I'm going, I'm going something close, man. This reminds me of Michigan Penn State. And I think this will be like a 24-21, 27-24. 27-21, something to that effect, somewhere in the 20s. I want to see Georgia's defense try to slow down Trask. I mean, every time I just feel like, oh, maybe is this the game that Trask kind of falls apart a little bit, if you will, or just kind of doesn't know what to do again, you know, just being the first time he started since what, high school or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I've seen him in the big stage and he pulls it off and he looked good, you know, in Death Valley against LSU, you know, up until the end of that game. But still, I mean, I think LSU's far superior to the Dogs, who already have a loss. And at the beginning of this year, after watching Georgia kind of claw its way through its schedule early on, I had said it. I was like, I think this Georgia team is going to lose a couple games, and I think the second loss is coming at the hands of the Gators. But we'll see. That's going to be an exciting game. Again, it's only Wednesday, but you know we love our Saturdays, so looking forward to that.
You
want to
hear really? Want to hear a really interesting stat?
Yeah, of course.
Steve Spurrier, Ron Zook, and Urban Meyer were combined 18-3.
Whew.
Versus the Dogs.
Dang.
So you're talking about a stretch from 1990 to 2010.
Dang.
So Spurrier only lost to him one time in 97. And then the let's see.
Was 97, was Rick the coach in 97 or no? Am I like way ahead of myself?
No.
Okay.
No, yeah, I think that was Ray Goff.
Okay, it was. Okay, yeah, gotcha.
And then in 04, the Zucker lost to him. And then 07, you had that infamous celebration in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Urban Meyer's only loss.
Mm.
So pretty cool stat there, sir.
Yeah.
Mr. Muschamp only beat him once there in 14.
Muschamp being a previous Dog himself, playing for playing for Georgia. Let's play a game, Ben. Because I'm in the college football mode, and now I can't even wait for tomorrow. Whoever's playing tomorrow, I don't know off the top of my head, but I already can't wait for college football. But let's play a little game. Here it comes. Everybody loves playing this dreaded game, but you know, it's hard to believe. I mean, college football is kind of winding down. Benjamin, who is your Heisman so far? Judging by what we've seen so far, what are you thinking? What do you think? I know we hate playing this game, but let's just do it. Let's just do it.
No,
I want to talk.
No. I think we're past the middle of the season, so I think this is a legit question that you're posing right now. And
sure,
if it was tomorrow, man, golly, I don't know how. I mean, up to this point, Justin Fields is still all undefeated. So, I mean, I might have to go with Justin Fields, but I mean, what are you thinking?
Earlier this year, when everybody else was talking about this, what I like to think is nonsense, because I'm, you know, how many times do we go into the season? It's got to be this guy. Then we're halfway through season. No, it's got to be this guy. And at the end of the season, it's somebody totally different. Jonathan Taylor, the running back from Wisconsin, was my first vote, because I was just like, man, this guy's doing something that I've never seen before. But with Wisconsin,
we agreed on that.
Yeah, and with Wisconsin losing these last couple games, the luster's kind of, I felt like, fallen off. On the flip side, a fellow Ohio State Buckeye, Chase Young, really garnered not only, I feel like, whoever was watching the Ohio State-Wisconsin game last week, but the nation. That guy is a future top five pick. And it's hard to think, you know, defensive ends is going to win it. But, I mean, if this guy continues to do this, Ohio State's got another big opponent coming up in Penn State. He's just looks like a man among boys. So I'm still going Jonathan Taylor, because I really like him a lot. But Chase Young really catapulted himself up there. And then another one, of course, who everybody loves is Joe Burrow, LSU quarterback. I mean,
I forgot about him.
Yeah, I think he continues to impress. And I mean, again, still they still. LSU has to still be the leading offensive producing college football team right now.
I'll tell you what, if he beats Alabama, if he beats Alabama, I would say he's going to snag it.
Oh, and rightfully so, he should, because that game's in Tuscaloosa, if I'm not mistaken. So, wouldn't blame him.
Yeah.
I mean, LSU hasn't been stopped by anybody. Auburn gave them a fight, sure, but I mean, Auburn's still a respectable team, 9 at the time and everything. But the couple guys that I think, in my honest opinion, has kind of fell to the wayside, Tua Tagovailoa. I always am just going to screw up that name, but it is what it is. And Jalen Hurts, after losing to Kansas State, I mean, yeah, they kept fighting. I can't see either one of them. I can't see it. So I think opens. Go ahead, Ben.
I think the ankle injury kind of,
that's
messed
it for Tua
up again
this
year.
Sure.
Yeah, because the same thing happened last year.
Yes, I know.
Ankle sprain.
Is this getting a little worrisome? I don't know.
Sure.
Too early to tell.
Yeah.
But we've seen it with college athletes. I mean,
yeah.
But who knows? Who knows? We hate that game, but I figure let's just talk. Oh, hey, wait 1 second. We got, looks like somebody's calling in. Oh, hey. Okay. Looks like, Coach O's calling in, LSU head coach, Coach O. I believe he's our number one fan. Coach O, we were just perfect timing. We were just talking about Heisman winner for 2019. I'd love to hear who you think it is. I'm going to take a wild guess. Coach O, what do you got to say?
Go Tigers.
Okay, that's not what we were asking, Coach, but... feel free, Joe Burrows, is he maybe a potential candidate, coach? What are you thinking?
Go Tigers.
All right. And he hung up. Okay. Well, thanks, Coach. Appreciate you calling in. And go Tigers.
I think that means Joe Burrow is probably his favorite.
I think that's probably what he. I'm pretty sure that's it. So for right now, we'll go ahead and hold that Tiger. And with that, let's chat about a former 2017 Heisman. Baker Mayfield made some news today.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you happen to see this?
Unfortunately.
Okay, I guess him and a local reporter kind of got into it. Mayfield was asked about the 2-5 Browns if they had lacked urgency at the end of the first half during the eventual 27-13 loss of the at the hands of the New England Patriots. Mayfield kind of barked back and was like, stop saying but, B-U-T. And this is quote unquote, I just told you the clock was running out. We had a penalty. Mayfield was talking to 850 WKNR radio reporter Tony Grossi, an ESPN affiliate in Cleveland. And Mayfield just kept going. He asked him, "What do you want me to do? Give him the ball back?" No, you don't play. You don't know it. That's just plain and simple. So essentially saying, you're a reporter, not a player. Keep it to yourself. Well, it appears as if Grossi then continued to poke the bear, and Mayfield was not happy about it at all. And he asked him how the drive had ended. And then Baker went off and said, was I happy with the drive? No, we didn't score points. That's the dumbest question you could ask. What, Jesus, Tony? After saying so, he stormed out of the room and took out his frustrations on Twitter, where he tweeted, everybody wants to hear the truth until they actually get it. I am who I am and always have been. Don't call it emotional when it's convenient and then passion when it fits. I care about winning, so yeah, I'm frustrated. If I was to act like it's okay to lose, then y'all would say that I've gotten complacent. My sense of urgency is at an all-time high, and if I offended anybody along the way, that's too bad. He then tweeted right after that, what do you make? Or no, that was it. I do apologize. But I don't know, man. It's like a 50-50 thing here with this, and this is how I just kind of feel it has been for a really long time when it comes to the media asking what some could see as kind of a asinine question, to be honest. Like, how do you think he feels? You know, like, what are you expecting him to say other than I'm not happy with the fact that we lost another game, the fact that they're 2-5? Like, it's like these reporters these days are literally trying to, like, pull headlines out of players. And this is just yet another instance of the reporter just kind of asking a really kind of question he should already know the answer to. Am I right? I mean, is that how you kind of feel?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of... This is bringing back Bob Knight memories of some of the, some of the post game questions that he would get, and right. I wouldn't say Baker's pulling a Bob Knight on him, but you know he's pulling a mild like calling out the media.
Sure, thankfully no chairs were thrown, but I mean, like, I don't even know what to make of Mayfield's comments. I almost kind of feel he's kind of one of those guys that where, like, his personality, and he even kind of brings it up in the tweet stating that this is who he is, you know, and if he offended anybody along the way, that's too bad. He doesn't care. And that's fine. Whatever. You're prone to your comments, your judgments. That's the way we live today. That's what Twitter's all about. You know, and like, do you feel like maybe Mayfield's personality, with his personality, does the media kind of put a target on his back, or does the NFL kind of put a target on his back going, you know who we could get a story from? Baker Mayfield. Yeah. Let's ask him these silly questions. Yeah, I get it. He's the franchise quarterback and everything. Yeah, I get it. The Browns are 2-5. Yeah, I get it. The Browns had high hopes. They traded for OBJ. Nick Chubb exploded on the scene last year. They drafted Baker Mayfield first. They didn't draft Saquon Barkley. He, you know, went number two to the Giants. But, like, what do you think, man? Like, do you think that his personality kind of gets him in some trouble?
Oh, it surely could, because you're right. They could be, you know, saying, hey, we can get a reaction out of this guy.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes. But it's not just Mayfield. It's been a lot of players, and not just in the NFL.
No, yeah.
You're telling me...
Yeah, it's not just in the NFL, for sure. It definitely is across the NFL.
It is, for sure. But like when reporters, you know, LA reporters walk in to the Lakers... And they walk in. Mm-hmm. Who's the first person they're going to talk to? LeBron James.
Mr. LeBron James.
Right? Like, because they know LeBron James essentially speaks in headlines. But, you know, and that's great. That's what the sports wants. People want things to read, what people would want to read. And Baker Mayfield kind of is becoming that person. Unfortunately for Baker Mayfield, they're struggling. So the questions are becoming negative. And his kind of, again, personality is putting, in just the way I see things, kind of putting a target on his back, which is unfair. But at the same time,
well, he's a quarterback. So he's going to be the guy that they go and ask.
Sure.
You know,
it's a great point.
With the hardest questions, because... You know, with football, you know, it's the quarterback can get a lot of kudos when he may have not done a whole lot, or a lot of backlash when he may have not done a whole lot. You know what I mean? So it's one of the easiest positions to critique, and you know,
yeah,
as they say, Monday morning quarterbacking. But that could, you know, with this, it's the same principle with LeBron. I mean, he's the leader of the team.
Sure. Or,
you know, quote unquote, one of the biggest, biggest names on the team. I guess with the Browns, they got a wide receiver crew. So I'm surprised they haven't hit up some of those guys, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. And the likes of what he may have to say about that, too. But
sure.
Yeah, I surely think his reaction will get a target on his back. And they know that anytime they ask him a question like that, they're going to get something good and something worth writing about.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly how it is, and it is kind of unfortunate, but that's, you know, you got to get people to read your articles these days, and I feel like they kind of handpick who they want to talk to, and yes, I do agree, yes, he's the quarterback
sure.
and everything, I get it, but they know he's going to say something hot-headed, or he's going to do something like walking out of the room after hearing something he doesn't want to hear, and,
negative
you know.
Negative press definitely sells.
Of course it does. And, I guess fortunately enough for Browns reporters, for them, you know, they've had their fair taste.
Material.
They've had their fair taste, you know, not just this year, but many years prior.
Mm-hmm.
I'd
ask you the question is.
True.
Has he already Johnny Manziel 2.0?
Oh, God. See, this is the question nobody wants to answer. This is the question that the Browns don't want to hear.
I agree.
And, you know, go as far back as the Brady Quinn. You know, like, they've had their quarterbacks,
sure.
man. You know, and they've had...
It goes further back. It goes further back than that. They've had, like, 20-something starting quarterbacks.
That's insane. It's insane. Yeah. And I want to say it's too early, but I'm not going to lie. You got to start. How do you put this? You got to start typing up that headline. And I don't know how far along you are writing it, but man, it's a great question. And I think he's more talented than Manziel. I felt like Manziel was very... You know, very happy feet, very run first quarterback who, you know, was blessed with a good arm. But Baker Mayfield threw, you know, he had some throws in college that just, you know, made your jaw drop. Now, on the flip side of that, you start wondering how much of this has become Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley had him, you know, and then following Baker Mayfield, they had Kyler Murray, my apologies, both in the 2 years won the Heisman, and then, you know, again, and we were just hitting on it, you had Jalen Hurts, who had transferred for Bama, and, you know, there was, and there still is, a ton of Heisman hope on him. Do you think that, you know, Lincoln Riley just has this kind of ace of spades for quarterbacks? And are we going to look back on this in the next 10, 15 years going, how in the world did they not draft Barkley number one and went and got Baker Mayfield? I mean, I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man. I think that they were definitely in search of a quarterback at that point. You know, they had,
fairness, they're always looking for a quarterback.
I know. What were they? We're coming off of a winless year with the Deshaun Kaiser, correct?
I believe that's correct.
So, I mean, yeah, I think quarterback was in the windshield, and they couldn't see past that. And for his sake, I'm glad that he went to the Giants instead of coming to the Browns.
Saquon, that is.
Saquon. Yes, referring to Saquon. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. So real quick game update. Top of the eighth. You got Adam Eaton on second, still 3-2. Anthony Rendon just popped up, and it was definitely a hittable pitch. Probably should have went to left field. Did not. Very fortunately for them, over the left field wall. 3-2 Washington right now. Top of the eighth. Two outs. Yeah, you know, I don't know what it is, but let's get on to something a little happier, something I know we both talked about that couldn't be any more excited about this news. EA Sports is open to bringing back the NCAA football game, the most beloved football or probably video game of all time, after now this fair pay to play law is passed in California. Because now players are now going to be able to make money off their likeness and everything, which is, you know, again, we'll see how all this shakes out. But now EA Sports has the opportunity, for those that love the game, you know, and used to play with quarterback number 7 or quarterback number 14 or running back number 21, you know what I mean, will be able to buy the likeness of them and create the game again, which it sounds as if EA Sports is all for it. And I know I couldn't be any more excited. And Ben, on a scale of 1 to infinity, how are you feeling about this news here?
This is awesome, man. I think back in the day, I think I got an Xbox, an original Xbox, just to play this game. I tell you what, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah,
it's been a long time coming. I can't wait to see it come back. And as you and I talk today, we'll figure out what game console we need to get to end up playing it. You know,
Juan Soto just knocked in Adam Eaton. Single, two outs, top of the eighth. This game is getting crazy. Oh my gosh. Great game.
Interesting, sir.
This is very interesting. as I had stated prior, the NCAA football video game used to have teams put together with likenesses of the players, but never used names because it was illegal. Well, in 2013, they ceased production after a class action lawsuit was filed by Ed O'Bannon in regard to the use of his likeness, which shut that down. Little history into the game. Began in 1993 as Bill Walsh College Football. That was the game. And then transitioned into 1997. 1997 was the first time it was referred to as NCAA. It's NCAA Football 98, which featured Heisman Trophy winner, classic Gator, Danny Werfel on the cover. So there's a little tidbit of trivia for you. The very first NCAA football player to grace the cover was number 7 himself, Danny Werfel. But yeah, this is probably the best news I had heard in, I don't know, maybe even all year, man. This is fantastic. Like,
yeah,
this is, I love this game so much. I know, you know, you and I had played it a bunch of times, and just one of those games, man. I love me some college football, and if it's not, you know, live action, I'll play it on the video game. That's not a big video game player myself, but man, games like that, those are classic.
Yeah,
throwbacks.
Me neither.
Mm-hmm. Sure. With that, Ben, you got anything here you want to chat about?
No, that about wraps it up. Hope everybody takes in the last hoorah here for baseball, and we'll see it back in February when pitchers and catchers report.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
Spring training.
Baseball's going to be starting a little earlier this year. And next time we talk, we're going to be reporting on who's going to be the World Series champion again. As of right now, Washington is up 4-2. Juan Soto just continues to produce. Again, if you're a Nationals fan, buy this man's jersey, because this guy is going to be pretty special. And what is he, 20 years old, playing in the World Series, doing things like this? I mean, I can only imagine what the next 5 years holds in store for this guy.
He was drinking grape juice Just after the NLCS.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes,
Nikita's got a long way to go.
Yes, he does. You know, and to kind of piggyback off that just a tiny bit more, Howie Kendrick hits a single. Oh, no. Oh, man. Juan Soto is at third. Oh, this is crazy. I don't think anybody expected this.
I sure didn't.
This might potentially would be looking at a complete World Series, all as we had wins. Talked about earlier. All road wins. Never has happened
yep.
to this point in the World Series. And now the Nationals are threatening. Man on third, man on first, two outs. Max Scherzer looking for his first ever ring. Steven Strasburg.
Let me ask you something.
First ever ring. Yeah, go ahead.
You think Martinez makes through this one without getting thrown out?
Yeah. Well, it's seventh inning stretch. That was crazy. I don't even know if we actually did bring that up. He got thrown out seventh inning stretch in game seven. But we'll see, man. Until the next one, though, everybody have a happy Halloween. Happy Halloween, Ben.
Yes, sir.
Hard to believe Friday's November 1st, and we're really going to be rushing right into these holidays. And great time, you know. Great time for sports. Better time for mankind. And you know,
yeah. Anybody attending the Florida Georgia game, stay safe.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking a little more before that. But man, that's just classic game. And yeah, until next time, guys. Rob with Bull City sports talk, Benny with me, and you guys enjoy your sports.
It's Bull City Sports Talk with Rob